And we can move on to our next story, which is all about crime fiction. Now, it seems that everything that Ben Affleck touches turned to gold these days, or at least into small gold statues, if his form at this year's Oscars is any guide. The Argo director is looking for his next project, and reportedly he's bought the rights, excuse me, to Dennis Lehane's latest crime novel, which is called Live by Night. It's the story of the making and unmaking of a gangster in the Prohibition era of America's Roaring Twenties. And our crime reviewer, who's a crime novelist herself, Angela Savage, has read it, as well as a new crime novel by Tony Kavanagh called Dead Girl Sing. And we'll find out what she thinks about that book as well. Angela, hi.
Hi, Michael.
Do you think it's Live by Night or do you think it's Live by Night?
It's Live by Night.
How do you know?
Well, there's a couple of giveaways in the text where one of Joe Coughlin, who's the gangster character in the lead, one of his bosses as a young man says to him, the people we service, they visit the night, but we live in it. They rent what we own.
Well, that's conclusive.
It is.
Now, I have to tell you that the only part of this book I read is the opening sentence, which is, I love this, some years later. I love it. I love that kind of opening, actually.
Yes,
some years later,
isn't it?
On a tugboat in the Gulf of Mexico, Joe Coughlin's feet were placed in a tub of cement. You'd have to keep going, wouldn't you?
It's priceless. And look, I have to say, Michael, one of the things I love about reviewing books for you is that it expands my reading horizons. I would never have picked this one up. In fact, I'd bought it for someone else for Christmas, and I absolutely loved this book. I was hooked with an opening line like that, as you say, you can't help but be. But I just found it such a compelling read. It's beautifully written, and the historical setting is seamless, much in the way I heard you interview Robert Gott about his wonderful new book, The Holiday Murders. And you know how Robert kind of opens a door and you're just there in 1940s Melbourne? Really, Lehane does the same thing with 1920s and 1930s in Chicago and, of course, in Ybor City in Tampa. You're just there. You're immersed.
And is it gritty in the same kind of way?
Look, it is. It's a neo-noir, we could say. It's gritty. It is very violent, but, and I don't have a particularly high tolerance for violence, but what redeems it for me is not only that the violence serves the purpose to advance the plot and flesh out the characters, or deflesh them as the case may be, but it's also... The book has a lot of existential themes to it, and there's a really strong sense that violence begets violence, and you know, it's really undershot with that notion that men who live by the sword die by the sword.
It's so hard to know what that quality that you're ultimately looking for is, though, isn't it? I mean, I thought that Robert's book was, you know, captivating in its violence, but there's a kind of violence that I just think is like, well, it's just thrills.
Yes, gratuitous.
Well, I suppose that's the word, gratuitous. Yeah. But, I mean, in a way, all novels are gratuitous. That doesn't quite solve it for me because I don't need to read the book. I mean, he did sit down and choose to write a book that was violent.
Yes, yes. Look, it is. I agree with you. It's a real balancing act. I think I have been thinking about this a lot. I've been involved in a few online conversations and discussions about it. And I think, again, what redeems a book like Lehane's is that the violence is in no way glamorising. And in fact, just at the moments when you're feeling most sympathetic towards the characters, Lehane comes in and reminds you that these are violent and vicious men and that they get their just desserts. I mean, there's a wonderful passage where Joe's father says to him, you know, violence procreates. And he describes the children of your violence as savage, mindless things. And it's that kind of absolutism, that notion that you really never escape what you know, you reap what you sow, that I think really lifts this book into something that's quite, not moralistic, but it really does ask and discuss those big existential questions.
We're talking about Dennis Lehane's Live by Night, so we haven't explained what it's about.
No, we haven't. It's set in during the Prohibition, which of course is rich fodder for American fiction, and it opens in Boston in 1926 with the moment where Joe crosses paths with Emma Gould as he robs a speakeasy owned by a crime boss. Now, this is a star-crossed lovers kind of relationship that we know is going to end in tears even before the heist that's supposed to provide them with the getaway money goes horribly wrong and Joe ends up in prison. And post-prison, the alliances that he forges there find him in the late 20s in a place called Ybor, which is part of Tampa in Florida. And this is, again, why I think this is such an interesting book. As I say, the Prohibition era, it's almost done to death in American fiction and film. But this, Lehane takes us to a part of America that we don't really know And interestingly, I read that he was in the middle of this work when Boardwalk Empire, the HBO drama, kind of hit the screens. And that's very much about the whiskey, Chicago. So he's moved the action to the South, where it's all about rum, and taken us to a part of the US that's very multicultural. There's a lot of Cubans, Spaniards, Puerto Ricans. And really, one of the aspects I most enjoyed about the book was being immersed in a part of the States I didn't really know.
So Joe Coughlin is our central character, and his father is a high-ranking cop.
Absolutely, and apparently was the lead character in a previous book of Lehane's, which I hadn't read, called The Given Day, and I think it's a credit to Lehane that you can read these completely as standalone books, although I will go back and read it because I'm so enamoured of his writing. But yes, there's a... It's very interesting kind of dynamic between the cop father and the gangster son, or the outlaw son, as Joe likes to think about himself. And again, though, Lehane just doesn't let those characters off the hook. They are all punished in a way for their crimes at the same time as sweeping us up in their stories. He does that quite brilliantly.
And how does he play with this relationship between the outlaw son and the cop father? I mean, is the son engaged in some kind of rebellion against the father? Is that why he's an outlaw?
There's some interesting reflections in the book about that where, you know, there's actually a character at one stage who says, you know, Joe, how can you be a gangster when you came from such a happy home, a magnificent home, I think the character says. And Joe says, I came from a magnificent house. I didn't come from a magnificent home.
Well, that's an important distinction, isn't it? You know, we went to New York for Books and Arts Daily late last year, and Henny, my wife, and I went to New York, and we broadcast three stories from there. And one of the treats that we didn't broadcast, actually, was a guy who ran a little bar near where we were staying, took us down under the bar and through the tunnels that were part of the Prohibition era. I mean, he didn't have to show it to us. We weren't making a radio program. He just said, hey, come and look at this. This is fantastic. And we explored all around under his house. And it was, I wonder, his business.
Yes.
And it was extensive. There were big steel doors and tunnels that led, you know, into a laneway that was behind the building. All the stuff that you see in movies, it was actually real. There was a whole subterranean
life, architecture
to enable this culture to go on while the policing continued above ground.
And Lehane actually describes that very thing in when Joe first arrives in Ybor City. He takes the reader into those tunnels that lead to the port, in this case, where the rum's smuggled in. It's fascinating.
I just love the fact that such tunnels were real, because even when I was a little boy, I dreamt that there would be tunnels to explore. Well, I mean, even when I was a little boy. When I was a little boy, like most little boys, I dreamt of tunnels. But they're really out there. So do you think it'll make a good film?
I do. I think it'll make a fantastic film. I kind of hope that Ben Affleck doesn't cast himself in the lead role, because I read Dennis Lehane for the first time, I went back and watched a few of the films that had been made out of his books, and I was sorry that I did. I was sorry I watched Mystic River instead of reading it, because I found the celebrity casting distracting. So I would encourage your listeners to read Live By Night before the film is made, so that they can form their own views of the characters, and then see what Affleck does with the story. But well, I think it's very...
There's no rush. He's not going to make the film next week.
That's right.
You're speaking as like this emergency.
But it is very filmic. You know, it's got that quality to it. And it's in three acts. You know, we've got the first act in Boston, the second act in Ybor City in Florida, and then the third act, which sort of takes the reader partly to Cuba and partly back again.
Okay, so that's Dennis Lehane's Live By Night, not Live By Night. Now, we have to deal crisply and efficiently with the next one. It's called Dead Girl Sing by Australian crime writer Tony Kavanagh, who's best known as a prolific writer of film and TV. It's set on the Gold Coast during Schoolies Week, where bad things are happening.
Yes, and I have to say the setting is one of the strengths of this book. He mobilises that time and place extremely well. It's lovely. It's evoked very well. You know, even... You know, the notion of car chases, you can't run a car chase in the kind of traffic that piles up around the Gold Coast and surfers during Schoolies Week. And I think his lead character, Darian Richards, is quite an interesting one. The voice is quite good.
He's the cop, isn't he?
He's the rogue, who's the retired cop and a bit of a loan shark who works in concert with his, you know, geek friend Isosceles, who's tracking things.
Isosceles.
Isosceles. Look, this book didn't grab me. I know it's grabbed other people and other people have loved it, and probably thriller readers will love it, but I thought there were two really big mistakes in this book. The first is that the denouement of Tony Kavanagh's previous novel, Promise, is actually given away in the first few chapters of Dead Girls Sing. Now, I wouldn't have done that myself, because I think it severely acts as a disincentive to go back and read the first book. And secondly, he does this thing where he uses a first-person narrative, putting the author's voice inside the head of a 20-something Brazilian woman who grew up on the favelas, and it just doesn't have, it doesn't ring with authenticity to me. She talks about herself and about other women like a man would talk about it. I just didn't think that worked in the book. If he'd stuck to Darian's voice, I think it would have been a much stronger read. But as I said, other people I know thought it was great.
What about the violence issue that we started our conversation with?
Look, this novel, I think, falls into what I call the stalk and slash subgenre of crime fiction. Again, it's not what I choose to read. I know it is very popular, but I think there's a kind of menace. And there were some gratuitous, for me, passages in this book that I actually just skipped over. Interestingly, I was reading another review where he said, you know, Kavanagh trawls through the dark recesses of humanity and you can't look away. And I thought, well, actually, I could.
Me, I did.
I did.
Angela Savage, thanks for coming in. Marvellous as always.
My pleasure, Michael.
Angela Savage is a crime writer and reviewer. And the books we've been talking about are Live by Night by Dennis Lehane. That one's from Little Brown. And Tony Kavanagh's novel is called Dead Girls Sing, and that's from Hachette. And you're with Books and Arts Daily. I'm Michael Cathcart.